Okay. Well, do your thing.
You once lived your life in the throes of Media Empire. You worshipped at the altar of working on it. But as you know, the gods change hands every few hundreds of years. And today seems like a good a day as any to announce that you worship a new god. The god that is Pig Iron. That's the name of the podcast. Not really anything else is going to change. Our focus will still be the same. And as always, the intro to our podcast will just be this sort of grating, grinding metal noise that then. Hello, everybody. My name's Michelle Perez, and we are on the Working On It podcast no longer. This is the Pig Iron podcast. As always, I'm joined by buddies. This is a world of buddies. We have the buddy Ruben. We have the buddy Jake McCune.
That's
We
me.
have the buddy Eliza Gager and a guest buddy, someone we are sort of bringing on in terms of helping on the pod. And we're gonna be doing bigger and cooler things in the near future. Wanna welcome Lucy. Hello, Lucy. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Ah, not a problem. You're just like you literally got introduced as this, like, maybe she should sit in on at least one of these, just for funsies. To that end, today's a little bit different, but still within our wheelhouse. I kind of wanted to ask everyone a question for the opening today. Obviously, Ruben's going to have words on this, but any of you guys camp during your adolescence or teen years?
You want me to start on this? Looks like everyone's got it
No,
ready.
man, explicitly not you.
Oh, I'm coming in. I'm coming in,
Oh,
dodging.
all right, generally, dog, like you're camping.
Actually,
What?
my adolescent camping
Hell yes.
was a lot of turbo bullshit. Didn't really accomplish much. Did some backyard tent work. I assume that was a test of like a really big canvas tent. I
Okay.
remember it being and how to shit in a bucket. And
Ooh.
following that
Well,
was like two.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Wait, why would you shit in a bucket?
Yeah, I was about to say
Listen, we
I
were
was
doing
heard
a
it
full
was.
simulation. It was a full simulation backyard camping experience. And
Does
they're
the
like, if
simulation
we,
require a bucket?
Was the
yeah, because if
simulation
you're, you have to know if
nuclear
you'll go in the
war?
wild in the moment at 3 a.m., will you hold it in or will you shit in the bucket? It
Going
was,
in, going
if I
inside means you
remember,
lose, I guess.
yeah, there was some kind of context of like, will the kids actually go camping? And I think they wanted to try and see if people would sleep outside. I
This
feel
doesn't
like
make
that
any sense.
it was
You're
purposefully
outside.
something like that.
That's okay. Are you in like a church basement or something? What possible reason could you have to shit in a bucket while you're camping?
No, you're outside and you're, well,
I guess if it's
well,
your
you don't shit on
back,
the
hold
floor.
on, hold
You don't
on.
want
You're
to shit
the
on
first
any
person who's
floor.
ever
You're
questioned
blowing Ruben's mind right now.
I was under 12 years old. I was an adolescent. I wasn't in charge of the fucking situation.
I'm
I
serious.
just know
Were
we had
you
to camp
outdoors?
and there was a optional bucket to not have to run through the dark they can go to the bathroom in. I
Oh, wait.
believe several people, I
Okay.
distinctly remember several people not doing that and running
This
through the
wasn't
dark into the house to shit.
No, no.
someone's backyard, right?
It's a grandma's backyard.
Okay, so my one guess is that grandma didn't want human shit somewhere in her backyard, so she made you all shit in a bucket.
Well,
I
we could go to the
mean,
house, but it was a pretty scary distance
well,
to
yeah,
walk at night.
made is a
camping
made is a
means
bad
digging in a
choice
hole,
of words.
digging a hole.
Digging a hole,
Also, yeah,
exactly.
Eliza still solved
Shitting
it,
our fucking
so.
grandma's backyard. Just fuck up my grandma's backyard. They had a garden back there. You couldn't really fuck it up. We had a cactus garden that they sold to the local Vallarta.
Oh,
Why
There
not
was also a
grow
car back
food?
there.
Okay, if nobody's eating anything in the backyard and it's so arid that it's
No,
not
they're eating
cactus
the
growing in
out.
it.
They're eating the cactuses. No, they're farming the cactuses. They're not just growing for fun.
What?
You eat cactus
Hold on.
in a Mexican
All right,
house.
yeah, let's
Ruben,
go
you're
back a
not, there's a
step.
lot of stage setting you're not doing for
Yeah.
us. Ruben, this is what I'm
No
talking
one
about.
asked me
It's
that. You
just
said,
like
did I
getting
camp
lists
as a
of
kid? What
things
the fuck?
with no context.
No, I think it's
to set the scene, dude.
Okay, I'm Mexican. So first, my family escaped living in Mexico.
Oh my god!
Prior to my
That's
birth.
Too far back.
hold on.
Fast forward. My grandma said my mom's a whore, and my dad ran away from home. 10 years later, shitting in a bucket. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay, the thing is you said you were 12 and you had no control over the situation. I think you should have at least questioned the situation.
I said I was under 12. I don't have a good span of time
for
how old I was.
When I was 6, you better fucking believe I questioned literally everything that was told to me. Literally everything.
I wasn't big on questioning as a kid.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I was big on existing.
Okay, even if you're not, like, I think this bucket situation is one in which you question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It blatantly fell apart. The other people did question it.
It is clear that everyone else here is like, why are you shitting in a bucket, dog?
I didn't have to go to the bathroom, so I didn't have this question. Several other
people
said they're
going to
go inside.
I think one person was open-minded. I am shit bucket agnostic, but only on the premise that grandmas often have these weird paternalistic demands that, yes, maybe you do ask with a certain je ne sais quoi, like, wait, what the hell is this like? Am I doing some sort of old-timey thing that I'm not aware of? But like at the same time, I think that like certain type of grandmas have different wrinkles than other grandmas. I feel like if you got a Mexican grandma, you're going to be inexplicably asked to do some crazy shit that maybe runs aground of the modern world. Jake.
Listen, I'll segue. Yeah, when I was a child and I was made to do camping activities, one of the things I hated the most was that it was simply that. Like I was like, I got a shit somewhere and it's just out there, and like I don't have any. I gotta just like bring toilet. Fuck this. Why are we even out here? Why don't we go to a place with toilets? Like I was not into the whole idea of being outside so much as a kid in the context of camping. Although I did go on a few camping trips with like neighborhood friends and the dads of those friends. The fact that
adults exist in the world who are incapable of making children interested in a forest full of animals.
Oh, hell.
Oh, yeah.
Natural wonders. It never ceases to amaze me. Like,
I mean, I was certainly a hard one to, I think I was definitely a hard target in that regard, but yeah, it was a lot of, just like white guys, you know, like at the time it would have been like four like youngish dads taking their kids out as an excuse to like drink beer and hang out with each other, you know.
I would be in Eliza's camp with that, but like the Game Boy just came out. I was just about
I was I was too much of one of those kids, but I think so. That also it does fall on the, like, I don't know. I think nature's cooler now, even though I'm not a big camper. But yeah.
Okay, again, I'm calling bullshit on that. My grandfather was an engineer at NASA. I was born into a house with multiple computers in the early 80s. Like, you don't get.
Maybe I had too many
computer
computers.
Games I was.
Too much screen time.
Yeah, I definitely.
And even so, like, mm-hmm. It was not a hard sell to be like, you gotta go outside and look at shit. This shit is amazing. Because it is amazing. It's like the easiest thing in the world to show a kid stuff outside.
I don't know.
I think that's what I missed out on. I was
on the opposite end of that. I got enough outside time, and because a good percentage of it was pulling weeds. And so at a certain point,
that's very individual. Like,
N64 is pretty cool. I think people mistreated how good the outside could be, and they just were bad at cooking. So it was just like, you don't want to fish and you don't like eating fish, and then no one here knows how to fucking cook. You eat a s'more and you go to sleep.
Oh,
you mean like in camping?
Yeah, just like they just.
Yeah, that's another thing. You got to have someone who knows what they're doing for food. But I think we should rope it back into why we're talking about camping today, because Ruben was supposed to lead this episode. Well, not lead. I don't want to put too much pressure on his shoulders. I know that's going to spook him. Mm. But
I was told not to lead this episode.
Our DIY project was camping.
Oh, if you give us a moment, what's up, Lucy?
So I have the synthesis between the Game Boy problem and actually wanting to go camping.
Ooh.
All right.
When I was a teenager, my dad and I went camping with a friend in like a camper van.
Okay.
And I was an extremely like online person at the time. And So I just want you to imagine me. We go out on like a fishing trip in this camper van, and I go and fish and everything. But at night, when we're not like fishing or anything, I am in the camper van with a little laptop, and I didn't bring my charger. So I'm just running a Linux computer with no graphics tethered to my phone so I can chat on IRC at night.
Hell yeah.
Oh my God.
That's the whole point of the Game Boy, is that you can bring it camping with you.
Yeah, that is the lifestyle.
While camping.
I agree. I do agree. Okay.
Formative teenage camping, though, different than like shitty kid camping, where like if someone doesn't pay enough attention, you could be dead in the woods.
Yeah, but that's on parents. And we're talking about, I think today, the whole point is we're going to talk about camping for yourself, not camping when you're a kid on trips.
I think I would have liked, as a side note, I think I would have liked to be taken camping as a teenager. Probably would have been nice.
Yeah, well.
It's nice when it happens. Yeah. Just kind of asking you some questions to kind of get into this, Ruben. In terms of
Jake Fish Jake said that he was gonna explain it, and I think we talked to Lucy, and then we cut it off there.
Thank you Ruben. Listen, our last episode that we had before we did the Martin interlude, so this would be about a month ago if you're listening, we talked COVID, we talked 2022, we talked new ideas, and one thing that came out of that conversation for us as a non-guest episode was, hey, it's easy. Eliza even said, it's pretty fucking safe outside. You can bet on that. It's relatively safe.
True.
Given all that, maybe it's time for some of us who've been holing up to try and endeavor or maybe think about outdoor activities. I know I am. I'll put it that way. Like, that's the reason I'm even saying it on this podcast. I've been up in quarantine for 2-ish years. And as much as I love playing computer games all day, as much as it is adaptive to my lifestyle, motherfucker, I think it's time for me to consider how to go camping. And I suck at it. So that's one of the reasons we're here, is I need some
Jake should be
tips.
Better at camping.
Yeah, I think I should, even if I don't really want to. I think it would grow. I think it would be healthy for me.
Jake is in one of the few instances in where he's in the minority. Yes, even me, a absolute loathsome jackass who is probably the definition of an inside kid. My adolescence, my teen years, my adulthood even, absolutely full of camping. I mean, I get the notion that it's like a bougie white thing, blah, 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 but really that's a lot of hollow rhetoric.
Yeah, that's marketing from people
I'm not
sell
out there.
You fancy tents.
I'm
like,
not out there
not
with
that
a,
bougie.
I'm not
think.
Out there with a pith cap and a machete, like going after uncontacted tribes. I'm like chilling outside at a public spot where they have designated camping areas. You do the renting, or you can do some quasi legal camping and public to maybe not so public land, you know, pick
dispersed
your poison.
Camping.
Yeah.
Dispersed
yeah.
camping is what they would call it when you want to find the map.
Yeah. I've done less of that, but like for you, is it like mainly a recreational thing? You know how people talk about that big well up of cortisol spikes that just sort of go down if you go fishing? Does it have that kind of quality for you? Why you do it, baby?
Well, so first things first, I got to talk about how I start another hobby because I watched an anime.
I think that's fair. To be clear for listeners, Ruben has been camping the most recently out of all of us and has been doing it actively for the past year, to my knowledge. Like, you go out with your partner, do some camping.
Oh, yeah. We try to just plan a couple of camps a year, see what's up, what the lay of the land is and all that. Sorry, Michelle, go ahead.
No, that was it. That was all I was asking earlier, Doc.
So, right now it's just doing the campground game, just because the logistics of a more involved trip for dispersed camping, even just dispersed for the same amount of time, like one day. Again, where do you shit? How much water do you need for that? How much water do you need to not die? Like, you want the emergency amount of water. You don't want just a normal amount. I see some people do shit. I don't like it. I see this, this person's like, I'm going camping, and they just bring a bike and a tent, and I'm like, okay, or they're on a motorcycle. And then they bring one water bottle, two beers, and like five hot dogs. And I'm
oh, God.
You're going to shit your pants. You're going to have a greasy butt. This is fucking the worst camping. This is the worst prep I've ever seen.
See, this is what I need to hear.
It's just some campgrounds.
Yeah.
They bring you, you got, when you go to campground, you're going to have a bathroom. How nice the bathroom is, and if there's electricity, and if it's full of spiders, depends on how nice the campground is. North Rim Grand Canyon, incredible bathroom. It has electricity. It has lights at night. It has flushing toilets. It's not a vault. No, it's not. You know, it's still, I think it's still a vault bathroom. They did something weird to it, and they got like.
Well, this would just be like a
vault bathroom.
Oh, that's just an advanced porta potty. So they just have a big hole, and it's all fuck, what's the word? It's all composting shit. Mm-hmm. So they're like, don't fucking throw trash in here. It's just for your dukes. And then they just throw it 50 feet underground. And they're like, you want
dukes
to smell
only.
It?
Dukes
only. Yeah. Just as an aside, that I've got toilet questions, Ruben. Is that what they call a chemical toilet?
No, that one's not a chemical toilet. I mean, they did,
what
they
is a chemical
balls-
toilet? What is a chemical toilet? I need to know.
There are compostable vaults, and then I believe chemical vaults are just ones that don't go anywhere, don't connect to the ground. And so it's probably, don't quote me on this, it's probably a concrete chamber, and they fill with chemicals to like melt down the dookie. And then that is probably a chemical toilet. I hope someone knows about chemical toilets more than me, because you shouldn't risk your life on my knowledge of chemical toilets. I was concerned about where to shit, but they don't really tell you if it's going to be a chemical toilet or not. Let's see. Chemical toilets are, that's what a porta potty is, because they put the blue stuff on it.
That makes sense.
Vault toilet is a composting one sometimes, because it's connected. It connects to the dirt at some point. And they're like, this dookie going to be dirt in 3 years. And so you can't put chemicals in there.
Contained system, and then
self-contained.
The bacteria is neutralized by the chemical. Is that what we're looking at?
Yes, and that they break down solids with the chemical.
Okay.
I'm trying to find it. I won't be able to find the name. Oh, I think it's the Navajo Bridge in Arizona near Utah. That has some cool composting vault toilets, and they're like, that dookie gonna drop 100 yards down.
Whoa.
It's not just a vault, it's a free fall vault.
Okay, yeah. You're actually sitting on that toilet, and then underneath your butt is like a 100-foot drop.
It's like a slide.
Oh my God.
Your phone's done for if you go in there.
That's hilarious.
Probably at least
a
50-foot drop.
Oh my God, imagine.
I'm guessing they have a flushing mechanism or like a flap or something.
It's a little too dangerous to just leave a drop. It has like a curve. How would I say it? You know, it's like a water slide, I guess. It's like a curved tube. It's sort of like how a toilet goes. Gravity is going to do the job.
Right.
If you fall in there or drop your phone by accident, it'll be at the bottom of the canyon near the river in a bit.
I'm just imagining like a soul toilet, but then underneath like this giant cavern.
They don't have some sort of safety mechanism there.
Oh, yeah. No,
the safety mechanism, what on the sign on the thing said, close the fucking toilet. That's all it says to do. Because they're like, it fucking stinks. You leave it open too long because it's a straight shoot to Duke. I assume the safety mechanism is that I think if you go around and outside, I think you could get into it to like unclog it if it like seizes
up.
Like
you'd
have
to go
dumps.
Down,
like,
presumably
children
down.
Attempting to use the toilet. Like,
oh yeah.
I think there's a kid's toilet. I don't think you would put a kid in there. I think there were like a smaller subsection that you like handle with a kid. I didn't get into the other toilets.
I would have heard about an incident at some point. If
I was just in there shitting.
There would be a child poop slide somewhere.
We would have heard about it, I think.
the worst water slide in the world.
I was going to say the first time I was ever at one of those parks, Ruben, was actually the first time I had actually did like some sort of psychedelic. It wasn't like a narcotic thing or this or that. It was around the Puget Sound sort of area. It was a, I don't know if you could still go to it, folks, so don't quote me, but Fort Flagler? Oh, yeah, Ruben, what's up?
I'm not raising my hand. I'm covering the
He's embarrassed, folks.
Fort Flagler is a historic state park in Washington.
Fort Flagler, basically, long story short, Fort Flagler is Washington State getting ready for a Japanese invasion that never really came. And so it's a series of beachheads and military bunkers and stuff that was sort of built, you know, as a defensive wall. It's very, very large, very picturesque. The nearby area oftentimes is used for weddings and stuff. And there's like a wedding procession. And
camp on the wall?
So there's a park area adjacent to it. And it's just like less than a few blocks away. It's nothing but perfect serene woods. And the banger of the experience isn't Fort Flagler itself, like the bunkery stuff. It's a series of wooden poles sticking out of this sort of damp, dry tide area that you will immediately recognize from Half-Life 2 and the Antlion Beach segment, particularly.
Oh, sure. I do know that parts of that were based around Washington.
And so those poles are everywhere, and being high on mushrooms, you're going through that experience where it's sort of fucking with your neuron grooves. And then what am I staring? It was like I walked onto the Evangelion beach, but I just played Half-Life 2 that much. So it's just like, there it is. That's the thing. absolutely wonderful experience. Obviously, they aren't all involving drugs or whatever. But for Flagler, what you were talking about with just some soda and hot dogs and like a not great diet while eating s'mores, it was something like that. It was a bunch of high people listening to Royksopp and blasting. Royksopp was going off at the time.
Poor Lino.
Yeah.
What else were they doing?
Well, these were mainly like DigiPen kids and people from a video game college. So they weren't like
seasoned campers.
They weren't like seasoned campers. They didn't bring like, bedding or whatever. So we were like sleeping on hard ground. I had, of course, camped before. And so I was kind of like going through everyone's tents and stuff with them. It was me and like the dopey bro guy from Utah I'd known from the time. That was probably the last big time I had done that with a group of people. I'd camped several more times, but for me, I absolutely love doing it in the Pacific Northwest, even though the worst part of waking up in the PNW is like, if you go around those places, they have like mild rainforest type climates. So you'll wake up like chafed and moist and like in your armpits. And it's like, oh God, I feel like unusually damp out there. Cause
are
it's
just shitting?
Humid.
Are they just shitting raw out there?
Colloquially, I'm not sure what you're getting at.
Wasn't there there's a historical site nearby where did they have bathrooms? What was the shit?
Oh, they
like?
They did have bathrooms. They were kept okay. Which
they
was thankful.
Population area, like if you're not a state park, you know, parking lot, it's really okay to bury human shit.
Yeah.
In the woods.
I agree.
As long as there's not like a lot of it and it's not, people aren't just like leaving it on top of the ground. It is okay to just bury it like a foot, 2 feet deep, as long as there's not a ton of people around. Because it does, you know, it does decompose and
back to the earth.
Also,
this is what I was told about camping. So
ideally, in a spot that is also sunned so that it dries, and don't put a rock over it, thinking, oh, I don't want someone to step on it, because that could help stop it from drying correctly and make people find Dookie later.
Yes.
Only a trace, no
That's
trace
a
left behind. That's what they say.
I was told just to dig a foot deep hole. Like as long as it was deep enough and it was covered enough, you're not gonna.
Yeah, it's like a 6-inch minimum. I don't even think it's 6-inch minimum. I think it's like 8-inch minimum. So yeah, about a foot down, burrito sized. And but those were just some extra tips from a park ranger that's like, you know, we have some places where people shit all the fucking time, so we would like it if you all as a people, as a society, if you could all follow these shit rules. A, other than depth, please
Hold
stop
on.
Fucking putting rocks
we're,
on top
we're missing context again
How?
Ruben, where yes. did you speak to a park ranger?
I didn't speak to the park ranger that time. I was reading the website about the tenets of not leaving a trace behind while I was planning a camping trip. And they have very specific rule sets for where to shit.
So that's where you got this info. Told you?
Because they made the rule set. Because you said you just heard about a foot. And I'm like, oh, I'm just letting you know, these are this is unclassified
documents. Ruben read it on a park ranger's website, I think is what he's saying.
I'm imagining yeah. someone at the website just looking like the park ranger from fucking Jellystone. Right. Typing
here's
it up
here's what I was thinking was
that's
that
what he's you, talking about.
If you are a park ranger, I'm very willing to bet you become intimately familiar with where everyone who comes to camp shits, even if it's outside of the designated shitting areas. So what Ruben probably read was some guy, or some not some guy, but potentially some org's tips for that, specific to their.
It's from the National Park Service's an article about their 7 principles of leave no trace.
Ooh.
When shitting. When shitting. Fuck, was it here? I'm trying to find it. I'll see if I could find it. I'll link it somewhere later. But effectively, it was a dude being like, hey, when we want nice rocks, people shit and then put a rock on top. And we're like, hey, let's fix aww. This trail with this cool rock. And then they pick up a big old rock just covered in wet shit 3 weeks ago.
So that's a how not to do it, basically.
So it's like, don't think my mind. That
I
helps.
I wouldn't even consider doing that. In I would never do that.
Oh, so well, weird. Hold on. There is window dressing I left out here. This is closer in context to when there are like the really well-hiked trails and people are like shitting on the trail and you can see the shitholes along the main road people use. So if it's like if someone would walk here, but you're on the go, so you're like, you're 4 feet off to the side and shitting, you're not like 50 feet in a random direction covered in foliage. This is stuff they had to start because too many people are leaving wet shits on the highway. And
who's doing this?
I genuinely think like very not smart people. Like
people also get weird Monopoly home rule tips of like, hey, you know what you should do if you take a shit in a hole is wipe your ass and then set the toilet paper on fire to
what
dry
the
shit
fuck?
In the hole.
That does sound like
and start a little shit fire.
What?
They had to be like, please don't. Stop! There's so many shit campfires.
I have a small amount of sympathy for park rangers now.
Did someone start a small hole fire over here? Just like cook a burrito real quick? No, it's filled with shit. It's good. And they gotta dig all the paper out. It sucks being a ranger sometimes.
Yeah, don't be that guy if you're listening. Don't go, just do what Eliza told you. Just dig a hole and shit in it and cover it up.
Peeing is more or less open.
It's a really like high population campground in which
yes,
they
yeah.
could have a bathroom. I mean,
if they have a bathroom,
also yeah,
there's a bathroom.
But yeah, it gets really bad along like high traffic trails that people are always hiking on.
I would like to see some more of these trails. I've heard some pretty good ones where somehow people are just getting a trowel and they just drop one right in the center of like the most well traveled. National Trail. I forget what it's called. It goes all the way through Arizona to Canada. The NPF? No. I don't know what it's called. Whatever it is. People love the shit when they're hiking, though, and they do it wrong.
Yeah, you're supposed to go off the trail by a certain number of feet. I'm sure it says on the website. I can't remember what it is. Like 20 feet or something. I don't know. Wouldn't you want some privacy? Like, that's...
some people are more about the speed.
Yeah, I keep imagining someone just, like, in the middle of a campground digging a hole and, like, right. looking at everyone in the eyes as they take a shit.
That's what it was...
Apparently, it's hardcore backpackers that are, like, gotta drop the speed, and they gotta drop...
They're out
they're
there
trying,
drilling.
They're going
how
low
fast
drag.
They can do a shit.
Low drag speed run. It's 5 a.m., 10 hikers wake up, one is to shit, they form a circle around them, and they just fucking burrito a hole in the middle of the street and then start running down a path. Fucking
they all just turn around in a circle and go, all right, man, do your thing, and they pinch their nose.
They all share the same hole.
Go off, King.
Oh my God.
Quick soft serve for you.
I do know that, okay, here's one thing that I've always been, like, that keeps me from wanting to camp is that there's this, like, I'm not saying everyone who camps is like that, but that stereotype is so funny to me of the hardcore people who are very connected, who are just like, yeah, man, just shit right there.
Shit anywhere.
It's like, yeah, there's something about that doesn't bother me really, I mean, but it's like, that's just like, that's an image that I don't really like need to carry if I'm going to go camping.
Before I get to Jake's point, also shit 200 feet away from water. Don't shit closer to water.
Ooh, yeah.
Then, to be honest, there were, I think we squeezed 3 camping trips in last year. And for 2 of them, it just clogged up. It was just like, you know what? You don't need to do this. You could die. I had a base level anxiety while out there because I was something could try to kill me.
And like you just didn't go to the bathroom at all. Like
it just doesn't come up. If you can maintain a minor amount of fear for your life and still have fun, your body will lock it up and be like, whoa, 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 not here, friend.
Could not be me.
I would say that only works for a minimum amount of time in campaign.
I am,
but hey, on an overnight, maybe that's okay.
I am not going to get sepsis because
it's instinctual advice. If it's been 5 days, there might be a problem.
Yeah,
but if you camp for 1 day and it's been 5 days, you have bigger fish to fry than a lack of shit.
Mount Everest.
Yeah,
as something like, I'm looking for the statistics.
Mount Everest grows 3 feet every year just from shit.
That bad. It's because people go to Everest and then they get like altitude poisoning and just have diarrhea the entire time.
Yeah.
So the trails are just disgusting. Like,
the brown road.
And also human corpses, because when someone dies on Everest, they just leave them there.
Yeah.
And then it's disgusting. I don't know why anybody climbs Everest anymore. It's horrible.
Is it the biggest one? It's memory serves, it wasn't the biggest one. That's like K2, yeah?
Isn't that... Yeah, did K2 get after Madagascar? I think that's how they
I think
out.
It depends on how you measure it, like whether it's above sea level or not.
Oh, okay. Just from total ground distance and then plus sea level. That's kind of fucked up. I guess.
And the other thing is, I think they changed it with Everest that you have to like take your shit back down with you now.
Well, they can't enforce it.
Like, they can't enforce it because you couldn't...
I guess not.
That's one of those rules
if you are like some British guy and you're with your Sherpa and you don't pick up your doggy bag, I think the Sherpa should be allowed to kill you.
Right.
Yeah.
I think I have too much faith in people because I was like thinking, oh, but why wouldn't someone just take it back down with them? It's the rules.
Yeah, I'm sure.
For the wrong reasons. It's like Ruben was talking about those like turbo backpackers, you know, they're not out there because they think nature is beautiful or like... They're
about
they're
the speed run
experience. They're out there because they're fucking speed running.
Ooh, that's a good monster. That's a good perspective on it too. Yeah,
people don't give a shit.
I'm here to tell people to beer, I walked, you know, 300 like miles.
Talking about like the dads earlier who are just out there to drink beer, and drinking beer in the woods is completely respectable. I'm not saying it's not, but there are a lot of people out there who will drink their beer in the woods and then leave their fucking cans there. You know?
Oh yeah,
can't leave your cans there.
Fuck those people.
It's a pro drink zone. Can't leave the place all fucked up. You also can't drive your fucking golf car around all day listening to fucking country music full blast while you hear your kids screaming from half a mile away. Because it's a fucking forest, dipshit.
That's
your kids' voices are carrying a mile.
I can't imagine going camping and camping next to someone who brought a golf cart. Good lord.
They're about to imagine what it's like camping next to someone that holds a gun really close to their children
in Washington State.
Mm-hmm. What I was going to ask you was in terms of lakes you had seen, like Puget Sound, all of that, is there any haunts in particular you're fond of, Eliza?
Well, Puget Sound is not a lake.
Oh, shit.
Ooh, snap. Yeah, tell her. Tell her ass. She lived in Washington for a couple of years and thinks she knows it.
It's a sound. It's salt water.
For sound. Fuck me. I've been hell.
What? What are you saying?
Never mind.
Is the name Puget Sound?
It's a sound.
It's a sound. It's a sound of the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
A sound is a body of salt water.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Like a sea or an inlet or something like that.
Dang old Wikipedia page for it.
So its name's Puget, the sound.
It's the Puget Sound.
Correct.
They introduce it like that all the time.
Which sound? Puget Sound.
Hmm. Okay.
But yes, I'm especially ignorant. Despite having lived in Washington for like a decade, I'm very ignorant to the amount of good spots that we have up here that I do know exist.
Well, according to my dad, and he has lived literally all over the world because he was an army brat. He's a big camping guy, loves outdoors stuff. He thinks that this area, the Pacific Northwest, is some of the best camping in the whole world. And his reasons are as follows. Number one, we really don't have any bugs. This is a huge thing with camping is bugs, and it's particularly true anywhere that has any kind of humidity. It's, yes. You know, anytime during the summer, if you're up in the mountains, you're just going to get eaten by mosquitoes. And other types of bugs too, but mostly mosquitoes. We have some mosquitoes in the Pacific Northwest, and it's actually getting worse as climate change kind of fucks up our biome. But overall, this is as close as you can get to a bug-free camping experience, with the exception, of course, of like arid regions where you're not going to be dealing with anything except the occasional scorpion. So that's great. You can go out to the mountains here in August or early September. Those are great camping times because they're still kind of warm from summer, but starting to cool off, so it's not, you're not going to get all dried out either. And you're just not going to get mosquitoes, really, which is amazing. And it's not humid. It's dry enough so that you're not going to get super, super sweaty when you're hiking. There's a lot of fresh water around, which is easy to decontaminate. Using, you know, you can bring iodine tablets, you can boil, you can use filters. There's a lot of different ways to decontaminate the fresh water in the area. So I think when I went camping, we either boiled or we used iodine tablets, which tastes kind of crappy. But if you have a drink mix of some kind, like an electrolyte mix, it covers up the purification tablet. It tastes really well. And so we wouldn't really do anything fancy. We'd have like probably some trail mix, and then my dad's camping food of choice was pretty much ramen noodles, and then, you know, some kind of dried protein like jerky is fine. And that was fine for like 2 or 3 day trip. It kind of takes up some volume in your bags, but it's so lightweight that it's easy to carry. And it's really nice during camping, just in terms of morale and fun, to have something hot to eat. Because you do get really bored of just eating, you know, cold or dry food. And with soup, any kind of a salty soup like a ramen is great for camping because you need those electrolytes and you need that water. And as I said, it covers up the taste of if you're doing any sort of iodine decontamination for water. So the camping around here is really good. I think probably the major camping trip we went on was called Lake Ann. And Lake Ann, I would have to look it up, but it's a really beautiful, I can't remember how long this hike was. I think it was like 20 miles up a mountain and then back down again. I think it was for like round trip, and I was about 6.
Oh, damn.
So it took a few days, looked like 3 or 4 days. It was Lake Ann. It's off of Mount Baker Highway. So it was a good trail for just a dad with a small kid. 1900 foot elevation, looks like. So yeah, it's gorgeous. It's partially arid, like rocky mountains, and like fields full of blueberries. So that was fun. And the lake itself, I think, is at a pretty high elevation, which is cool. And then there's a lot of hiking through actual forest. So I think my dad probably chose it, not just because it's a good camping/hiking trip in general, but also because it sort of gives you an experience of a lot of different biomes that are in the Pacific Northwest. So you go through, the conifer forests up the Rocky Mountain. And then I think we went, I don't know if we were past like a tree line or if there just weren't a lot of trees around the lake itself, but either way, it was great. So I recommend that one a lot. But yeah, I don't know if right now is a great time to go camping. We were talking about kind of camping to get out of quarantine. If you were going camping in the United States at the moment, I think probably almost anywhere in the United States right now, with the exception of the southern desert areas, it's going to be pretty fucking cold. And of course, it's always cold at night in the desert. So.
Yeah,
but you can still, you can do cold weather hiking. It's just a little riskier. You should have more gear. Make sure that you got the right temperature rating. Probably Ruben knows more about that, like individual temperature rating on sleeping bags and gear and tents.
in my head, to my gamer self, that's sense. Like hard mode. That's like, if I was to get into camping, I'd be like, ooh, I would never start in the winter.
I wouldn't. People die a lot.
Right, yeah.
I think it's something like 6 people a year just fucking die in national parks, and a lot more people just go missing.
Yeah, it's not that hard. Like, as I mean,
no. Yep. It's really easy to die in the wilderness.
It's not that hard to fall asleep and just get too cold. Your body will get too cold, and that's fucking scary to me.
Yeah, there's logistics in terms of what your elevation is and what your actual base temperatures will be and what shit will drop down to. If you're in an area that has a lot of elevation changes, that could be something that could surprise you weather-wise.
I mean, it's a trope. It's like a trope in a lot of survival fiction or whatever. The person who falls asleep and is like, I'm fine, and then just like fucking gets the little...
Woke up.
Yeah, they become the little match girl. They, you know, they're like, oh, I'm so warm, and then they're freezing to death.
It sneaks up on you. Yeah, I remember one thing that my dad always really hammered on was your feet. And this is specifically because it's kind of like if something happens to your tires in the middle of the wilderness, like you're fucked, and your feet are
the
things that are getting you in and out of whatever situation that you're going to be in up there. So he was really adamant. When he was teaching me how to camp and hike, he's like, we have to stop every X amount of miles or time or whatever, and everybody has to take their socks and shoes off and check your feet. And so he's very specifically taught me, like, these are, you know, he took me to shop for hiking boots and then specific kinds of socks. And he, you know, everybody has, I'm sure, individual opinions, but he's like an old school guy. So he was like, wool socks, because wool can keep you warm even when it's soaking wet, which is something nice about wool. Now we have a lot of synthetic materials that can do that kind of thing, but you never want to wear like cotton socks when you're hiking, for example, because they get soggy and then they kind of fall apart and they do not keep you warm. But a wool sock cuts way down on friction and it keeps you warm even when it's wet. So if you step in some creeks or fall in a puddle or it rains or it snows, and if you and your feet get wet, you can get hypothermia from wet feet really fucking fast in temperatures that aren't super low. So you want that wool, you want that wool sock barrier. But so he would tell me, for example, you got to check your feet for hot spots. And a hot spot is what happens before you get a blister. So after you've been hiking for a little while, you want to just pay attention to your feet. And if you can feel any particular part of your feet getting extra hot, then you want to put the moleskin, which is an adhesive kind of fuzzy tape, on top of the hot spot before you get the blister. Because once you get the blister, it's kind of too late.
Oof, yeah, I done. Hate that. Was my yeah. That was again like back. I think I had some experiences. Now I'm remembering as a kid, like nothing crazy, but just this whole concept of if I'm going to hike, that means I might get a blister. Fuck that shit. Why would I do that? None of the preventative measures you have entailed here were ever like imparted on me.
That makes me crazy, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
It's such a cool and fun thing to do, and it's such like, I don't know, I'm not going to say that anybody's life is wasted if they've never gone camping. That's not what I mean. But I do think that like going outside and walking around in the woods or the desert or the mountains is such a human thing, and it's such a cool and important gift to give to your kid. And I understand that not everybody has the benefit of my weird autistic father who has like a million special interests and has read 40 books about every single thing he's been interested in. But yeah, it's not like framing the issue as, well, if I go hiking, I'm going to get a blister and that fucking sucks. That's a reasonable thing to think about going hiking if you're 10.
Exactly.
The adult's purpose in this interaction is to be like, well, I understand why you feel that way, but here's how we don't get blisters. Getting blisters is optional. You don't have to get a blister.
Blister tech.
What?
Yeah, the
Discord tech of blisters.
Yeah, you need that. You need the wool socks. Your dad had the tech for blisters.
Yeah, yeah. And again, he was like he's old. He's like not even a boomer. He's silent generation. So this is a dude who was camping in the 50s with all leather, wool, cotton, you know, before
old school,
before rayon,
yeah,
polyester. Exactly. This shit's fucking 50 pounds of clothing. 30-pound backpack with a 10-pound frame.
Right. The dude's wearing... Yeah, exactly. He's wearing a framed backpack that's made out of, like, iron or something.
Fucking steel frame.
This guy, when I inherited the shitty station wagon that he drove all through the 60s, it had a pipe screwed to the front bumper that was part of the rack that he used to carry his hang glider around.
Hell yeah.
This is a dude who, to go camping, would put his hang glider on top of his 1976 Toyota Corolla station wagon, drive it up to the top of a mountain in Montana, and then jump off. So... He knew everything about how to pack, get up the mountain, and then jump off the mountain without dying. And he did this many dozens of times, presumably. So what we're looking at here is the Walter Sobchak type. That was an extremely accurate stereotype of what Vietnam veterans are like.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those guys got really into this, like, outdoorsy type stuff because, you know, they were too fucking traumatized to spend time around other people in their leisure time. Now he just plays Arma 3.
Hell yeah.
The Arma 3 mentality goes very well with camping because it's like, you know, assigning objects to various limbs,
making sure
that you've got your bag all loaded up, inventory management. So really, the gamer mindset, the gamer champion mindset, really transfers very effectively onto camping, I think, you know? You want to look at your
I believe that's true.
Ratings?
The more I get into Escape from Tarkov, the more likely it is I will start to enjoy camping. I'm beginning to understand this.
Yeah.
It gets very real to be like, do I need this weight? Do I want to lug this shit with me?
Totally.
Is this enough food? Is this enough extra food?
What's his name? I want to say Bill Burr, but that's not it. It's not Bill Burr.
It would be very interesting if that's
very
the...
funny if it were. But there's a writer who hiked the Appalachian Trail and just wrote a book about it. And he said that all of the, like, really experienced trailheads told him to not bother carrying any food except for Snickers.
Ooh.
Wow.
And something about Snickers, it's like, well, you got the peanuts, you got the sugar, the chocolate. And then the only thing left over is a wrapper, and you can just put the wrapper in.
It makes sense. Like, I honestly, it's one of those things, like, even, you know, before an energy, if I know I need quick calories, and even in my city life, I will grab a candy bar for that reason.
Oh, Bill Bryson.
I was looking that up.
Bill Bryson's a great writer. I've read a couple of his books, I think. Yeah, he wrote A Walk in the Woods, I guess. I'm looking at this article. Apparently, it's considered to be a book that sort of changed the culture of the Appalachian Trail because so many people.
I know a lot of
hiking the Appalachian Trail after it, which I don't understand because the majority of the book is like, I've been in the woods for 2 weeks. I'm so sick of Snickers that I would rather die than eat. Everyone I meet is insane. I'm thinking about throwing this guy I met off of the side of a cliff. I mean, it's just, it's a really fun memoir because it's basically going insane in the woods while eating candy bars. But it's a good book if you want to read about camping. I haven't read it in a while, but the stuff I remember is good. I don't know. We didn't bring candy bars when I went camping. My dad was really set in this. He really liked the ramen thing. I think ramen is a good base camping food.
Yeah. That's also really calorie dense, you know?
It's salt and noodles.
Yeah.
You got the carbs, and then you bring in whatever protein you want to put into it.
Mm-hmm.
I
might bring some gelatin powder if I went camping to put into a soup.
Damn you. Oh.
What's up?
Lucy's had a hand up.
I really quickly in my head said, you're going to make Jell-O? Damn.
Yeah, you can make Jell-O.
Send the cooler overnight. This is going to be good in the morning, y'all. That's just going to set.
Eating it out of my hand as I hike. Like, hey, guys.
Warm Jell-O.
Here's with some Jell-O. I got it in a bag. I do have a different food setup, though, pretty different because it's just been car camping at this point.
Ruben,
I do have a handful of gear. Oh, yeah?
Let Lucy talk.
Oh, shit. Is Lucy in here?
Lucy's just had a hand up that I wanted to check.
I'm just
cool,
waiting
dude.
Patiently. Eliza was making
very
a good
patiently.
Point, so I was just waiting.
Yeah, no,
that.
Eliza was spitting for sure.
So something that came to mind when Eliza was speaking is that I think a lot of the reason why a lot of the younger generations have such a negative view of camping, like, for example, the idea, if I'm going to go hike, I'm going to necessarily get a blister, is because a lot of like the Gen X age parents like mine just assume that they can like intuit how to do camping without mm-hmm. doing any preparation. Mm-hmm. And I think that comes through a lot in American media too, because there's always like the trope of like suburban dad who assumes he knows everything about camping and just totally fucks it up.
Correct. This has been my experience with camping. That's exactly what my family did. I didn't mention it because I was trying to be brief in the opening, but one of the trips we did was we had to fucking go home like the morning after the first night of a 3-day trip, because they just biffed all of our food and burned everything. Oh, and it's God. And we didn't catch any fish, so they didn't have, and they had to like make a big breakfast to compensate. They didn't bring anything to cook eggs with, so they had cast iron pans and then eggs, and then we're like, these are just burning, and they wasted half the eggs burning them. And then they poured pinto bean water into the cast iron pan to be the butter lubricant for the eggs, and then they made gray eggs. And I don't know why we didn't eat the beans too. They were like, we had to save the beans. We had to ration that for later. So the bean water is the butter for these eggs. And we said, we're not fucking eating those. Two people ate the bean water eggs and we went home.
Have people complete been getting train wreck.
Pure horror.
The 50s?
Like, okay. When I was imagining like someone intuiting how they were going to do this without doing any preparation, I was not imagining bean eggs. That's a level of incompetence beyond.
Eliza, pan, beans, eggs. That's three, and we're gonna catch fish. That's 3 days.
I don't
just
really
assuming that you're gonna catch fish somewhere is so.
They barely fished.
I genuinely think I don't want to definitively say people have been getting stupider since the 50s, but there's a lot of evidence.
They also bought the fishing rods for that trip. No one was an angler in this crew. No one knew how to fish either. You assume
back to video games, because none of us would be stupid enough to assume that we were going to be able to like mm-hmm. always find resources if we went on an expedition in a video game.
It's all around you.
We would check. We'd be like, hey, what's your level on angling, Ruben? And Ruben's like, I'm level 5. I'm like, we're not going to catch shit.
Yeah, how are we going to catch this giant fish?
It's a bad idea. I go all the way in with prep. It's all prep logic. I do a nice stir fry. I bring my wok, and nice. I got
woks are
a little heater. Joke.
Yeah, even as a non-camper, a wok over a fire, that's perfect.
I also have a tiny isopropyl backpacking stove.
Oh yeah,
and I can wok over that. I just pre-cook the rice. Don't cook your rice at the site, by the way, unless it's like a 4-week fucking 3-day trip. Put bags of rice in your cooler, and then you can just fucking fry them on the spot when you get to the site. It's
best
sick.
best way to make fried rice for sure. Leftovers, you make that rice, cool that shit down.
It's great.
Well, there is a way to make rice on the site that's going to be a little bit more predictable. I don't know if this is easily purchasable in the U.S., but like in Japan, whenever you go camping, you'll make curry and rice, and there's like a device that is designed just for making like rice over the fire.
Yeah, it's like a canteen. I know what
rice,
you're talking about.
Rice. Oh, that's. I mean, obviously, there's rice cooker tech in Japan is beyond anywhere else. But I didn't know they had like specific camping rice cookers. That does make a lot of sense, and it's awesome.
So it's not like electric in any way. It's just like a box that's like on a stand, sort of.
Hell yeah.
But I've like there's definitely a way to make rice.
I've seen a version that's also like on a stick. It looks like a big metal canteen. And you just throw all the shit in. Close it and it like latches, and then you hang that from a stick over
like
a fire
cooker.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat similar. Yeah,
I can't find something, but
I think we had a little tiny propane stove. I think my dad didn't build a fire, he brought a stove.
I do love
smart. Little propane. Like also look out for your stove. Fire look really out for your fire restrictions like, you might need a stove
because he didn't want to build a fire and like leave a fire by the side. I think he just decided for that trip propane would be better. I mean, also because Pacific Northwest, it does rain kind of unpredictably, so you don't want to be reliant on always being able to build a campfire, because sometimes you can't if it's too wet, if you don't have materials.
I would imagine that, especially out here where it can be dry and then 2 hours later it can start to be really wet.
Also you could end up with some like chunkier material, not materials, you could end up with chunkier gear items to try and be building a fire and then be like, I got this big ass fucking pan to cook in. Whereas you could get smaller contained systems to work better on the stove. Yeah. I fucking found it. A Hengu cooking pan. Nah, is that the brand?
Is that just the type of wok you bring out?
What, the people figure it out? Okay, I found one so people could see the see what it is for size reference. Like I said, it kind of looks like a canteen. Is this what you're talking about, Lucy?
Let me take a look. Did you drop it in the chat?
I dropped it in. I dropped it in the desk.
Did I put it in the wrong place? I put it in the wrong place. Sorry. I told a bunch of real life friends. I just showed them.
Yes, this is exactly what I'm talking about. This is the exact thing I'm talking about. So use this to cook rice over a fire. Cool.
Okay, so yeah, for the listeners, yeah, it is basically just a metal container with a little hook on it that you can hang over a fire, provided you have something to hang it off of.
You know what it looks like?
5 millimeters up.
You know what it looks like? It looks like one of those, at least from the side profile shot, it looks like one of those containers for binoculars.
Yeah, it has a military container vibe to it.
Yeah, like a very canteen.
You also have to consider that for years, this is how rice was made in Japan. Not like directly over fire, but like with a wood-burned like clay pot.
Totally. Because it's not hard to do, you know. I know Ruben was talking about making fried rice on a wok, but that there is something very, like Eliza was saying, with noodles. If you go camping, you can cook rice over an open fire.
I think it really depends on where you're camping and what your local resources are. Because, I mean, ramen makes sense if you're going somewhere where you have a lot of water just, like, around.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not packing in so much water, but you're harvesting water locally and then decontaminating it, then, yeah, noodles or something that's, like, water-heavy makes a lot of sense. But if you have to pack in your own water, then you want to, like, adjust your packing in that way. But yeah, I mean, Pacific Northwest, hiking and camping, there's a lot of water around, and it's clean enough to eat as long as you take the precautions. So you can rely on having local water available to a certain extent. Depends on the time of year, obviously. Like, there are different water levels. Actually, you know, somewhere I'd really like to go camping locally, and I don't know, maybe Jake and I could hit this sometime, is the Snoqualmie River has a really heavy quartz deposit. Quartz and amethyst.
You get that quartz?
And you can go out there and just dig around in the mud and pull up big quartz crystals and geodes and shit like that. And that has always seemed like a really fun... I mean, I love just hiking and camping by itself, but it's also fun to have like a destination, you know? You want to go dig around, get some crystals, and then go home. That sounds like a good time to me.
I did love as a kid, even big shiny rocks. That is a cool thing.
Do they have a rock limit for what you can secure with you? On the daily when you're rock hounding?
Damn, yeah, rock hounds alert.
It is so
they'll never know.
It's
plentiful.
Exactly, yeah, it's so plentiful. Apparently, yeah, it just doesn't matter. So there used to be on Capitol Hill in Seattle, there was a every weekend there would be like a little flea market, and it was completely unauthorized and full of like actual flea market type people as opposed to like farmers market type shit, which is what you usually get in Seattle. So I haven't seen the flea market in a while. I hope it comes back. But one of the guys at the flea market was this 75-year-old dude with really long white hair and a white beard. He looked like an actual wizard.
Hell yeah.
And his name was Merritt. And this dude only sold one thing, and that was buckets of quartz crystals that he had dug up at Snoqualmie River.
Hell yeah.
So he was basically like this old-timey mountain man prospector who would come rolling into town once a month or once a week with buckets of quartz crystals and amethyst and sell them by the side of the road at this flea market.
Oh my god, I bet he would make a killing in Seattle too. There's so many people that would love crystals.
I would always buy from him. And one time, after a few times of me talking to him being like, hey, this is really cool, and just showing interest, he told me where he got his stuff and kind of gave me directions and that kind of thing. So he's really cool. I hope he's doing okay. I haven't seen him in a while, but yeah, it's a whole thing. Like, this is a really good camping area, but apparently the geology in the Pacific Northwest is also super good for rock hounds. People find a lot of good crystals and shit around here, I guess.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
I've got a 10-pound limit, though. Infinite rocks.
I don't think there's a limit. If there is, I haven't heard of it.
I bet there's only a limit for certain people.
I don't know. I mean, it's it seems to be so endemic to the region. I don't think anyone cares.
Right. Who's taking all the quartz? What do you got, Lucy?
I have no.
So I wanted to make a similar suggestion for a park for any listeners that are down south. there is a state park in Arkansas where you can go and dig for diamonds.
What? That is fucking cool, actually.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, if you go looking for quartz or amethyst up where Eliza suggested, you're probably going to have a much easier time finding something nice to bring home. But sure. Yes, there is a state park in Arkansas, and I believe it's in central Arkansas, where you can actually go and look for diamonds, and people do occasionally find big fucking diamonds. Occasionally, I will add. So, like,
right.
Chances of bringing something home are going to be much less, but if you're down south and not near Washington, it might be worth a trip.
That is kind of fun.
This place. I can't remember what it's called, but I've definitely heard of it.
The state, I'm assuming, just has some sort of thing where it's like, hey, whatever you find is yours, or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's about the long and the short of it. I personally haven't been to this site because I didn't go to central Arkansas a whole lot when I lived there, but I know there's a state park there, and like if you don't have a shovel, they'll like rent one to you.
Oh my god. I just started rewatching Deadwood with some friends, and that's I just get big Deadwood vibes from that. Going prospecting.
There is a, what is it? I did a bit of research on rock counting because I was going to merge these skill sets of car camping and then bringing a bunch of material to going to BLM land and then collecting rocks instead of hiking in between the camps. So if you need official guidelines, usually you'll find things under Bureau of Land Management, and that will, they will give you limits. Apparently the Washington-Oregon limit is 25 pounds of petrified wood per day, but it doesn't seem to add limits to other items. So
it's a lot of petrified wood.
Just have as much shit you want.
That's considerable.
Yeah.
But 250 a year. Hey, hold on. Not 25 a day forever.
Oh.
Yeah, you gotta stop eating after 10 days. Can't just have as much as you want. But I mean, that is a shitload. If you just wanted a backyard that was only petrified wood, you could probably tune that out real quick.
Yeah, I think December. If you want more petrified wood than that, you do need to be limited.
Yeah, I know there's, I mean, there's artists that do stuff with it. I guess that's where the limit comes from. Presumably someone's out there hounding for all that wood.
Or you just sell it forever. You become rock seller. And yeah. It's like, you never stop me from selling. It's all I can sell out here. I just own this whole lot. They also have some verbiage about a reasonable daily collecting amount, because apparently it got pretty fucking wild out there sometimes. And they're like, guys, get the fuck out of here. Garbage truck pulling.
That's what I've done. Yeah.
They're kind of like, it has to fit into a trunk. It has to fit into a trunk. Let's hold on.
It's all fun and games until someone shows up with the fucking giant truck or some shit and tries to...
The U-Haul.
Yeah.
That sounds good to me. I mean, is there any greater joy than, like, digging a hole and finding something cool in it?
It's true. I mean, what else is a loot box but that in our current environment of the world? Like, I literally play a game where I hit a button to open something... And there's a little bit of a pause before it shows me what's inside of the thing I'm looking at. And that is the same as digging for treasure to me.
That's digging. Yeah.
that's the same fucking thing. My brain is like, yes, I'm digging for treasure. And I'm watching a little like clock spin for a brief half a second before it shows me what's inside. Sometimes it's cool. Sometimes it's not. What's up, Michelle?
I was about to say, My dad is considering, after years of watching YouTube for people like essentially go by beaches with those metal detectors.
Mm.
Yeah, he's been doing that and following a family in Britain where a lot of their industrial section or their like industrial sectors got shut down. So they'd like also throw a sort of remote metal detector on a string. And they'd sort of fish out things. And they'd find like big metal beams and like World War era rifles that are like basically not desiccated. That's not the word I'm looking for here, but basically eroded beyond any ability to use.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just sort of wild because they're in this sort of complex man-made river system in the city. Yeah, like he wants to do it as his like old guy thing. He's got a bunch of grandkids, so like that's his inroad to like successfully being a grandpa. It's just
he wants
walking
to be
around
a cool metal detector grandpa. Yeah,
I definitely do too. I fucking love metal detectoring. The thing is that metal detectoring in the United States sucks.
What?
Really?
Did we clamp down on it or something?
Well, no. because we don't have a history of metal using.
That's
true.
Mm-hmm. We got loot out here.
The oldest thing that you're going to find here that's made of metal is going to go back to, you know, colonial settlements.
Right.
So it's not like in Britain where you walk around in a field and you find a Saxon hoard.
Find some fucking Viking sword shit.
Do not have stuff like that in the United States. And here's the other thing. Anything you do dig up that's not like related to settler colonialism is going to belong to indigenous people who were here before. And you don't want to be digging up their shit.
It's true.
And most of that shit is not going to be metal anyway. But any artifacts that you do find that are not like directly deposited by European settlers is going to belong to indigenous people.
I'm going to be really honest. I'm going to be really honest and open right now. So this better be a fucking safe space. Listen.
Oh boy.
Before you said that.
How many arrowheads do you have, Ruben?
It can't.
I'm looking to my left and my right.
I didn't even realize there wouldn't even be cool shit to find when I was thinking metal detecting. I really just thought, like, God, I hope I come across like a whole ingot. Just a big old brick.
Coins. Like, you think about ancient coins.
Yeah, like,
coins
oh, look at
ingots. A little dagger.
Finding ancient Roman coins in the shores of Louisiana? I don't know.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I guess, I mean, maybe you'd find some, like, pirate shit if you were in exactly the right spot. Maybe.
Right. No, that's a great point, though, just in terms of, like, I bet there's just the sheer numbers game of finding cool shit is so much higher in Europe when it comes to metal detecting.
Yep. I mean, you can find, like, I don't know, coins and jewelry and stuff that people just fell out of their pockets at the beach, but it lacks a certain...
It's not the same anymore.
You really just
fucking shot this in the head. I was hoping in 5 or 10 years I could be like, yeah, let's add a metal detector to the camping
it's
setup.
It's a huge bummer. It really
fucking...
is. It's a huge bummer. Lucy's got their hand up, so what's up?
Yeah, what's up, Lucy?
So, Jake, I think you mentioned like the loot box thing.
Mm-hmm.
What if I told you that capitalism had solved that issue for you and you can have the camping experience of just digging for random like minerals and stuff in the comfort of your home?
Oh no, you're gonna try to get me to play Minecraft, aren't you?
No, it's stupider than that.
oh, do tell.
Go on.
So I'm not sure if they sell these in the US, but I've seen like Australian YouTubers, what they'll do is they like, you buy this thing where it's like, really hard sand and they give you like a little mine pick and you like try to chop it open and it'll have like a random mineral or gem in it.
Oh, that shit's fun.
So it's like a literal blind box of like digging for the stuff that you might see when you're camping.
That's kind of cool, actually.
It's actually the complete opposite of fucking cool. I was watching some
fake
excavation aside. Hold on. I watched it being
like a gift for a kid, but there is the argument you should just take them outside as well.
Exactly.
I was doing normal stuff and I was watching a person collect pennies and they were like, I bought $3,000 of pennies. We're doing a penny unrolling.
$3,000
and they're
going to
find the cool pennies.
Because
sometimes you get pennies worth more than the money you put in and you just give it back to the bank and get your money back and then gain a profit from sorting pennies. But then I found a person.
Well, hold
doing,
on!
Let's do 100 bricks of sand, compressed dirt that they might put a gem in. 90% of the time, it was piece of glass or piece of concrete. It was
sad. That was imagine getting it for
up.
A child and being like, you might find a gem and it's broken
glass. You could get
glass.
Gold or a gem. It's a fucking bottom of a bottle, just like the corner of a bottle.
Oh, no.
Well, the thing is those videos where like a YouTuber will be unboxing like 100 of those are usually targeted at fucking children. So the children that aren't getting to go camping are watching this garbage on YouTube.
That's wild. Oh my god!
They should just watch camping on YouTube.
We gotta blow up YouTube and take kids camping. And I didn't even like camping as a kid. And I'm saying
there's even a more depressing version. You can even not even be in the lottery to get a piece of gold. I think they got like one gold roll, and it might have been like a flake, like a just like crumpled piece of gold foil or something. I don't even know if they got that high of a tier. They got a couple amethysts, so that was okay. Something happened.
I had a couple things of amethysts as a kid that I still remember being like
fucking,
the coolest thing.
There's the fantasy version that like puts a Lego piece in it. So now you don't even get like a rock. It's just a bunch of dirt. So just a starch on your desk and you get like a dragon leg. And they're like, hey, if you buy 30 more of these, you could build a shitty Happy Meal toy.
I mean, yeah.
Depressing. It's
That's
so
just
depressing.
Fucking like, sad out here.
Go outside and dig a hole in dirt.
You can find a regular rock in your yard. That's way better.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Sorry, Eliza.
People are not allowed or encouraged to do this shit anymore. And it's like, oh, it's dangerous to go outside by yourself or whatever. It's really bad. It's really
at Christmas.
Bad for
I am actually, yeah, this whole conversation is making me very thankful as a child that I liked cool rocks. That I just wanted to have cool rocks at one
All
point in my life.
Like cool rocks.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
That's great.
Well, the thing is the capital has like encouraged at the point where like parents are afraid to do anything like take their children out into the wild and you can just buy them a safe experience instead.
Yep. Yeah.
It's not supposed to be safe. It's outside. That's
it
the point.
It fucking sucks. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're supposed to get hurt. You're supposed to fall down. Like every kid in my every fucking class that I had in elementary school, there would be a kid who broke a limb and had a broken arm for the year. And that
or just have a big ass scrape on your shin or something because you fell on your bike. Like,
I'm like, they're young. They'll live.
Yeah.
That's what they're for. It's what children are for. Their bones don't solidify.
They're for being punished.
It's so funny because I just feel like I grew up in an era where, like, when the internet was like shiny and new as a kid, I was like, I don't fucking care about going outside, but I still had ages like whatever, like 6 to like 12 or 13 or 14 before I became internet addicted. Like, I still had that time of not having screens, and I feel like kids don't have that as much these days.
Well, yeah, it's because YouTube has become a machine for getting kids addicted to gambling.
Yeah.
Love gambling, though.
Well said.
I can't get enough.
It's the new, like when I was a kid, what you would use YouTube for was just the TV, and that was still controllable by your parent just going, "Hey, shut that fucking thing off." They didn't give you a tiny one that had a TV on it, you know.
I mean,
extra giant TV.
I mean, that's also dependent. I'm sure some kids were allowed to watch as much TV as they wanted, etc. But like, the point is that, you know, trying to tie into what Lucy said, it's so infinitely easier to keep them inside these days, and it is encouraged even, and that blows.
I mean, I want to ask though, like, truly, sometimes I'm curious about this. Like, is this our outward perception just informed by some of the goofy phenomena we see online? Like, I also see a not insignificant amount of like viral memes and stuff, just like people actually out in the woods and stuff recounting like funny stories. There was the sort of dopey teenager kids who were just doing the hangout, and people were saying all these mean-spirited things about them, but they're out in the woods and they're just having fun with their friends. And then the next big hangout they had with people, it was like 40 of their classmates in their peer group like showing up with them positively. I would say sometimes, like, yeah, it's not always going to be like that, but I wonder how much of it is also just like, are we just kind of getting some confirmation bias just because we see annoying fucking people online? I also see like a lot of YouTube channels that are explicitly about like camping. Like, they just take off because everyone loves it.
That's
great.
First of all, I'm not really sure what you're describing when you are talking about classmates in the woods. I don't know.
Yeah,
I have no idea.
That seems like you're referencing a TikTok or something.
Yeah, it was a TikTok. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I also completely missed that.
Number two, yes, we do have like hard data at this point that children are not spending as much time outside.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not, I think the CDC is not who keeps track of that, but in terms of like child psychology and stuff like that, children are spending significantly less time by themselves. They are constantly being supervised, and they are definitely not being allowed outside as much as they were. I would have to like Google to find the statistics, but they do exist. I have read them.
Lucy, what's up?
So one anecdotal thing I want to add to that is like, even when I was a kid, I was like in fucking, what's it called, Cub Scouts?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cubs, little Boy Scouts.
And like, I mean, Boy Scouts fell apart, and I'm sure that part of that has contributed to like children not getting to go out camping. But even when I was in it, never once did we ever take part in any outdoor activity ever.
What?
Yeah, no, I can. I did a little bit of Cub Scouts, and that's ringing a bell. Where it was like it was all indoor, like building the fucking rally car and shit like that. It was not camping.
The box car. Yeah,
right. Well, I mean that's.
I do
the
see
issue.
A picture
so, like,
of a box car.
I was in 4-H
it's the first
at
image.
One point, and I was in Cub Scouts, and like, these are like both organizations that are supposed to get kids outside. And in neither of these organizations, and I lived in the South, where like you think that these would be like where these organizations are strongest and are holding most to like those values of getting kids outside. In both of those instances, never once did we go outside and do something. And I'm sure that's part of what's contributing to that trend. Because when like the organizations dedicated to this are crumbling and not able to do that, then like, is the busy like two parents both working and take their kids camping? Fucking no.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, there's also an element of, like, I think the thing I more see colloquially that I was referencing with regards to, like, me growing up is, like, I was just able to say, hey, I'm going outside to my parent, and they would just go, all right, cool, come back and, you know, be back by, like, 2 hours, 3 hours. I really hear a lot these days that, like, that doesn't happen as much with kids. Like, you don't just leave your house. Without
I don't
a phone,
understand
unattended.
Because every single child no. now has a two-way radio on
right.
at
yeah.
all times. If anything, I would be sending my kids out more and for longer and with less supervision because I'm constantly in contact with them.
Make them
and
pick up
was,
some oat
I mean,
milk on
the
their
rule
fucking
when I was
way
a
home.
Kid. If I mean, my mom would be like, "Hey, either come home or call me by 5 o'clock and let me know where you are."
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I stayed in touch with her, she knew that she didn't have any reason to worry.
But also, yes. I guess, the thing I'm thinking now is, like, these the kids that are potentials for going outside are also contending with having YouTube, etc. Shit that we just didn't have as much of
they
back in the
YouTube
day.
They have YouTube, and they also have way more homework now.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a
way
yeah.
more homework and schoolwork than we used to, even when we were kids. And when we were kids, we had way more homework than our parents
our,
did.
Yep. Yeah.
When they were, I remember my dad commenting on it, and he actually... one time he got so pissed off at the fucking school because not only did they make us go through the motherfucking DARE program, but they also had something in my tiny, tiny little Pacific Northwest college town, which had absolutely no gang activity whatsoever, except maybe Russian mobsters bringing heroin in over the border. But that had nothing to do with us. They had something called GREAT, which was Gang Resistance Education and Training. To teach all of these 12-year-olds in a, again, liberal college town to
yeah.
not join the Crips. And that's, that's literally what it was. Here's how to avoid joining a gang. When someone walks up to you in school and's like, hey, do you want to join a gang? Don't join the gang. That was it. Well, my dad got so pissed off at me being expected to spend my valuable free time as a child on this. He wrote me an excuse letter. And he sent it in with me to school one day to hand to the teachers that was just like, my daughter's not going to fucking participate in this. Leave her alone. She's not going to spend her valuable free time on this fucking bullshit. And I remember the teachers got really mad. Like, I think they tried to, you know, talk him into it. But
eat
it,
teach.
Things, what?
I was telling the teachers to eat it. I pay for it.
That's what he
Get
said.
Get the fuck.
He was just like, look, I'm the parent. You can't make me do this. This isn't part of the curriculum. It's just some extra bullshit that you are trying to make my child participate in. She's not going to do it. And there's nothing that you can do to me. Like, what are you going to do? Nothing. You can't expel her for it. You can't punish me. You can't levy a fine. She's not going to do it. And actually, that's one of the reasons I have become so confrontational as an adult, because I watched my parents do this to my school several times.
Hell yeah.
Like, a few times the school tried to punish me for various things that were ridiculous and didn't make sense. And my parents were just like, no, you can't actually punish my child for doing this because we're not going to let that happen. And I mean, to a certain extent, my dad is like 6'2" Vietnam veteran. So when he shows up at the office, people don't really argue with him that much. And then my mother was a lawyer. So the combination of the two of them making any sort of appearance at the school and being like, we're not going to do that.
Hell yeah.
People didn't argue with them, which was a really good lesson for me to learn as a kid, and has helped a lot in avoiding people taking advantage of me over time. But I told that long story just to kind of circle back around to the point that kids do not have a lot of free time anymore. And the free time they have, they're like desperate to get any sort of interaction and any sort of dopamine. So you got stuff like TikTok and YouTube and shit like that. And it's horrible. It's not a lot of it is not something that parents are doing wrong. You know, parents
are
trapped in this system with the fucking public schools in the same way that the children are. So
that's what I was just thinking. Like, if I was back that old and someone was like, hey, kid, go outside. And I looked down and there was an iPhone in my hand. I don't know if I would go outside, you know, like
they don't have fucking time to go outside.
Yeah.
They also don't even have adults telling them how to go outside safely and to have fun when doing so. I mean, it's like we were talking about the blisters. What happens when you go outside? You get cold, you get wet, you get bitten by bugs, you get blisters. You know, you're not wearing the right clothes. You don't know how to feed yourself. You don't know what cool stuff is in the ground if you start digging. I mean, my parents had to teach me, hey, if you go to the beach and you pick up big rocks, you find crabs underneath. That's cool. You know, someone has to actually teach you to do that stuff. That's not something that kids just know how to do, right? And then the adult in your life has to be like, okay, here's why it's cool to find crabs under rocks. And parents don't have as much time to do that shit anymore. Parents don't have as much free time either. People in general have like significantly less free time. And that's capitalism. Like Lucy was saying, that's
right.
They have taken your free time and they are selling it back to you in 10-second increments.
I always think about that when we talk about, this 20, 30 years ago, it's like, what's changed? Like, oh, really? Just that, just the fact that capitalism has accelerated. It's segmented a bunch of things. There's a million more things to buy and to consume than there were 30 years ago. That's the only
image I'm getting.
Yeah,
is like fucking. I'm thinking of Daria. The two parents are like always at work.
I love Daria. Oh man,
like that far back, we are commenting on how this is a problem, and it's not gotten better in the past 20 years.
Well, and Daria.
Wait, that was 30 years ago.
Yeah,
right.
Daria was not millennial. She was Gen X, and the Gen X kids were known specifically for being latchkey kids.
Yep.
Because that was the first generation where the majority of two-parent households, both of those parents were working 9 to 5 and then also commuting every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So they were commuting to and from the suburb, which means that parents were complete, like kids had to be at school at 7:45 in the morning. So you didn't see your kids in the morning except when you were like desperately trying to get them out of bed and on a school bus or to school. And then the family didn't see each other at all until everyone got home at like 8 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole generation was raised, you know, even if they were relatively privileged and white and in the suburbs, they did not see their parents very much. And now they kind of, a lot of them, you see them commenting on Facebook. It's like, oh, well, when I was a kid, I took care of myself all afternoon. You know, my parents weren't around at all. This new generation is so entitled, blah, blah, blah. And it's a complete misunderstanding of like not being around your parents ever. That's not good either.
Yeah, there's not. That's not healthy.
No, I'm sure.
It's not.
Facebook. It's great.
Generally it can be, it depends, but yeah, no, as a assumed condition.
Give an X amount of people in our audience looking to their left and their right like, oh, is that right?
I don't even mean it in that sense too, like, again, bringing back to what Lucy said about Daria, your parents are always working when you're around the dinner table,
so
they're alienated.
I'm so good at cooking now.
Yeah, I mean, see, and that's, I think Ruben is like,
I go camp.
One of the exceptions that proves the rule, because I know so many fucking millennials who cannot make toast. They can't.
Oh, yeah, it is frightening. I'm so glad I got a job as a kitchen bitch when I was 15 or 16, because that just solved the problem of learning how to cook. But I've encountered people like this. That's honestly, that's a good
millennials to cook.
Good topic for a future app, in all honesty. Speaking of things we have to do yourself,
you know, like
home ec's been fucking gutted. It's terrible.
I'm like one of the, I think I'm the oldest person on the line at the moment, and even when I was in high school, we had a home ec class. It was number one optional, and number two had been gutted to the point where the only thing we learned how to cook was a apple crumble in the microwave.
Oh wow.
Oh, microwave
only.
Not even
the oven.
Rough.
Not even the oven.
That's sad.
We had ovens in the room, but we were not allowed to use them until we had taken like home ec 102 or something.
Oh God!
Which nobody signed up for because it was
multiple semesters to use the oven.
Yes,
we're talking about teenagers, right?
Correct. Yes. 14, 15 year olds.
Christ Jesus.
2 years.
They
taught year
us
two.
Things which were actually useful. Number one, how to fucking wipe a counter, which is something that millennials that I know, especially men, do not know how to do. They cannot wipe a fucking counter. They can't clean a sink. They cannot wipe out a microwave. They just don't think to do it. They never do it. And so the home ec teacher was like, okay, here's how to disinfect a surface in your kitchen using a sponge. And here are different times you can use a paper towel instead of a sponge. Here's how often to get rid of your sponge. Here's how to clean a dish rag in the washing machine. Like, that was useful. That's useful information. Everybody should know how to do that. And many people don't. And then the second thing they taught us was how to use a sewing machine, which I think is why I ended up taking the class in the first place. Because I really wanted to know to learn how to use a sewing machine.
It was great.
They taught us like really basic. I think they just had us made a stupid little throw pillow that had stuffing in it, and it was super useful. Like on that basis alone, I borrowed a sewing machine and I ended up making a prom dress for one of my friends. It wasn't very good, but that doesn't matter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like. This is all means of production stuff, if you want to get back to it. This is like teaching kids how to use the means of various productive labors, how to use a sewing machine, how to create stuff, how to cook, how to handle tools of various kinds. That has been massively de-emphasized in public schooling now.
Or at least in a meaningful way where it's not commoditized a certain way. As of this recording, 2/1/2022, there was this Amazon high school class that had leaked where it's like,
oh yeah,
you're trying to think of a curriculum for kids to basically do a shtick not unlike that Starbucks indoctrination everyone gets put through, where everyone can go 1 through 5 bullet points about how sick Starbucks is for its growers, its wholesalers, blah blah blah. If anyone here has ever dated someone from Starbucks, they could say that shit in their sleep, blindfolded, at gunpoint, not saying it's happened, but it happens anyway. And they want to try to apply that curriculum, that sort of HR blob, to high schoolers.
It's marketing. It's not even a real class. It's like,
well, I felt like the class was specifically designed to get kids ready for a specific middle management job at Amazon.
Yeah, you can do stuff.
Oh,
I didn't even
know that.
Yeah, you can. Like, have you ever heard of like tech centers and the like, Jake?
Yeah, I mean, I worked at Amazon in seller support.
No. I mean, tech center in high school.
Oh, no. Although we did start to have computer classes when I was in high school. It was like kind of a new thing.
This is a little bit different than that. We would have to go to an orbiting tech center thing. So we would have to actually go 20 minutes up to Bad Axe, Michigan.
I see.
A magnet school?
Slightly different. Basically, a few hours out of your day would be specifically at the tech center working in a specific field. And sometimes the way the specific field would work is applied use of the skill. Hairdressers, for example, would operate the boutique and would give out various hair dyes as well as wild haircuts.
The first time
I got a red mohawk as a teen, I got it from a fellow teen.
Oh, okay. That seems like a more robust home eco type situation or something.
Yes. I was in the arc and engineering course. And if I wanted to at the sort of prior to lunch or snacking time, I could like actually go up to a little store that would be operating, selling candy, food, snack foods, etc. And you would go through that. The metal shop guys and the car shop guys would basically have to like go through this disassembled go-kart. It kind of more closely resembles a dune buggy, and they would go through that and they like taught you practical skills that if you wanted to like actually say go to one of those trade schools, you've already got like pretty decent prereqs And also you'll have like people at the tech center who are like, yeah, no, this person is great at this. You definitely want to, you know, eye on them, et cetera, et cetera. All of that good stuff.
I mean, that's really fortunate. Like, I really more to like kind of what Eliza was talking about. Like, to me, when I was growing up, both home ec and shop class were things I saw on TV that did not reflect my schooling experience. I was like, wait, what? They have that in school? And my parents would be like, well, yeah, they used to. And then I would be like, why don't we have that in school? And they'd be like, I don't know. We fucking just moved here a few years ago. And then, you know, like it was the early 90s. Like, I don't know why my public schooling, well, too young for shop class in that. And then when I later went to a private school in Atlanta, they abandoned that shit. They gotten rid of that.
There does seem to be an attitude, and I noticed this since I grew up in a town sort of near Seattle, which was, again, very, very, very white. There was a single black student in my entire school district, and he had been adopted from Ethiopia. Where there was this attitude that teaching kids any sort of mechanical aptitude or, like, working with your hands at all or any sort of fabrication was low class. And none of these students would ever use that information except as like a hobbyist, because all of these kids were going into STEM or into liberal arts.
It also tracks just with the rise in general of like software as a job or anything in that field, I think.
Right.
Where you're sitting, where desk, all of a sudden the guy at the desk is making shit tons more money than the guy working with his hands.
Right. So it was completely devalued. Like, yeah. Oh, you're never going to use any of that. So let's just take it out of the curriculum year after year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lucy?
So you saying that about that class strata remind me exactly of my high school experience, where we had two high schools when I first started. There was the new high school that was kind of in the area of the wealthy, that I was lucky to be like in the area of. And then there was another high school, the old one, on the other side of town. And if you wanted to take a shop or car mechanics class at all, it had to be at the old high school. Mm-hmm. So any of the people who went to the rich high school, they had to take a fucking bus back to the old high school if they wanted to participate in that at all. And then like 2 years later, they opened a third high school, which was a quote unquote tech high school, where it's preparing like the kids for the STEM jobs. So wow. When I think of that class strata, it's exactly like that. And then even later on, I saw that class strata get even worse, because my last year of high school, they decided that your high school wasn't going to be determined by how close you lived to it. It was going to be determined by like a feeder chart. So certain elementary schools would go to certain middle schools.
Oh God, yeah. And
in my particular case, the nice rich high school was a 10-minute bike ride at most, whereas the poorer high school was clear across the other side of town and would have taken like a 20-minute drive on a bad day. But they decided, since I was in one of these poor neighborhoods that would have gone into one of the poor elementary schools, that unless I got a waiver, I would have to go to the school farther from me, because they wanted to create that class divide.
Yeah.
Wild.
That's definitely a political technique you'll see, because I grew up in the South, where there's a huge discrepancy in money getting drained from public schools and put into the private school system. Yeah. And I haven't heard, I feel like I've heard of something similar like that growing up, where they basically, it's I don't know if it's exactly gerrymandering, but you stop, yeah, you stop making the location of the school valuable, as valuable, or rather the location of a house in proximity to the school is valuable, and you start to manipulate it. Basically say, hey, if you make enough money, your kid gets in this funnel.
I think you're thinking of redlining, Doug.
I guess. I don't. Yeah, I mean, similar concepts, right?
Okay. I mean, yeah, redlining is very similar, because it's just like outlining like what are going to be the poor areas. So yeah. It's functionally the same thing, except for you're just applying it to like school districting.
It's just a political means of giving people who can pay for it like a better.
That's exactly what happened to me, but I don't remember why I switched schools. I was right next to a brand new elementary school. When they opened, they were like a full teacher run faculty that were like their own union or something. It was like a rare school that they had the chance to, that they didn't have to listen to like state guidelines. They could teach the curriculum any way they wanted. So shout outs, Miss Matobe. That's my elementary school teacher, wherever you're at. Big ups. She taught me my entire elementary school. We had a mixed fusion grade school, just as a fun school thing.
That's you went they to some like, quote experimental school.
They were like preschool like to six or something.
Old-timey schoolhouse kind of style.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds good.
Preschool
to
six, and my teacher. It was great because my teacher saw me failing a class when I switched teachers, and she said, "Fuck that," and she put me back into her class.
Guess
and
tight.
she taught an accelerated specialized curriculum where she taught third to sixth grade simultaneously, and so we would teach everyone sixth grade information, and then we would catch up third graders on special time, and then everyone else would do like book work on their own when she shifted her attention to the younger people to catch them up to the sixth graders, and or sixth graders be put on independent study. They had a lot of cool shit that they would do like that.
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's kind of wild. I will say I'm in school right now in a cohort model, and I think it's actually fucking dope. Like I'm taking all my classes with the same people throughout the next couple of years, and not that I anticipate going to school much more after this, but I wouldn't want to go back and do it a different way. I think it's a very great conducive model for learning.
Oh,
I know it's harder
up.
Obviously harder to facilitate on a public school level, but like that, yeah, it's cool.
I didn't get to the fucking part where they split so when I went to high school, all the student population got cut in half and 90% of people had to go to a new school, and then that was the split part. I didn't fucking get to it. But yeah, they did the same thing. We're like, hey, we got a brand new school, but fuck a bunch of you. If you don't live in certain area codes, you all get sent to a different high school. And they're like one of four high schools in the city. So everyone randomly got tossed. Some people immediately started considering moving. I was going to get to go to the new high school because even though I was out of the zip code, there were waivers for any students of our school. They knew the faculty of the new high school in town, and they were actually setting up our curriculum to pass off like in the same month and football it over to that high school. But that fell apart and a bunch of people got sent to other schools. And it was pretty fucked at the time. But I had very little context as a kid. I was more concerned with maybe goosebumps, something. I'm shrugging.
That sort of bureaucratic chaos is something that isn't really talked about very much when people are discussing American public schooling. You know, we talk about sort of systemic failures when we should also be talking about like meta systemic failures, because my school experience was like exactly the same. I ended up going to like three or four different high schools at the same time, like driving myself around to different classes and shit, because of a similar situation. And I mean, we want to wrap up here because we're supposed to be talking about camping and it's been a while, but yeah, I mean, it's, the system itself is all fucked up, and then on top of that, the system is not even being implemented in a reliable way. Like, kids are getting shifted around, they're getting sent to weird schools, schools get canceled halfway through. It's, yeah, it was just constant chaos.
It's a bad time. So, thanks for listening. We had, I didn't even get to talk about the sleeping bag.
Shuffling cards. Sleeping bags is like, we'll have more. Yeah, dude, listen.
Thermal rating.
We tried to go too hard against the gear, and we didn't get as much gear talk, but that just makes for a gear episode. Because
okay,
I do love
I'll
gear.
Mr. Gear.
Mr.
Gear
this,
is logged on.
This is another way about, I this is another this gateway for me, the not camper, into camping. Is that like I can obviously contend that gear is fucking sick. and that there's probably some cool stuff. I'm out of that.
You can find. I found a Japanese hatchet for $30, but we're getting into gear. Yeah, we'll get into gear next time.
Twirling his Japanese hatchet on camera right now while we record.
Yeah, in the name of
like knives. We want to talk about what knives you want to bring into the woods with you.
Yeah, sorry,
ooh,
everybody.
We will. Okay, the next Ruben episode is probably going to be knives episode.
Blades.
We're going to study the blade on this podcast.
We'll call it the gear episode, and we'll just go over physical items that I harm, that I threaten people with, or touch the wood.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Let us know in the comments below if you'd like to hear about my chisels.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm actually pretty adverse to prepper stuff. In my mind, if you're just generally prepared and has anyone else seen this fucking guy who built the skateboard tunnel into his backyard? It's like, kids, you gotta escape because the compound's being overrun. And they built a little tunnel with skateboards for him and his wife and kids to crawl through.
That's just an excuse to dig a tunnel in the backyard.
I was gonna say, that's just a fucking ride for your kids.
Oh, it leads into a cargo container full of prep gear and then idealistically a ramp for a Jeep to plow through a fake wall. I think it was on the History Channel Discovery about preppers' ultra strongholds, and they would review them.
About it, they're like, "This is fun as hell.
I love to pass tunnel. Look at my command center.
We all love to build a fort. It's okay.
I want
to
build a fort. Just admit underground. You play Fortnite. Have cameras around my house."
Part of this reminds me of like one of my favorite criticisms of preppers, but they are preparing for a very specific scenario that they've concocted in their heads in a sense exactly like that.
It's so specific every time.
Yeah, like
every single time it's like no water.
I can't
wait. No water, no food, a Jeep, 3,000 bullets.
It'll be perfect. The moment the apocalypse hits, we'll all be ready with our skateboards to slide into our tunnel.
I can't believe it was like a whole show they did about like we look at your fucking prepper setup. They obviously give them some money to help them build it, and then they review it at the end too and give you a score to be like, hey, you fucked up, by the way.
I would watch that show.
Yeah, what's that show called? I watched the whole thing. It was really funny, especially because the preppers would get mad at the experts.
Ooh, that sounds so good.
They'd fucking hate it.
Wait, this is just like episodes of Grover getting mad at people criticizing him.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that sounds awesome.
The voice
is it just
like,
Doomsday Preppers on Nat Geo?
Your food setup a 2 out of 10.
Oh, I love it. Oh, it's so good. Exactly. Yeah, that's it. I think it's Doomsday Preppers. I'll check.
Packaged canned items and forgotten a can opener, and then the guy would respond. You're right. I don't agree with that because, and then
the quality of their preparations is graded by the consulting company Practical Preppers, who provide analysis and recommendations for improvements. That fucking rules.
I mean, because it gets to be a little advertisement for their own business, right?
They would also blatantly probably give them the money to make the improvements, and they would do like a check-in on the next episode. It's like, Jeff, is your family going to die in a cold winter now?
Like fucking kitchen nightmares?
We expanded our water tanks.
In the time since we left, did a Sasquatch kick in your door? And if so, how many rounds did you ventilate him with?
We got the red tip hollow points, and we can now store 300 gallons of water in a mountain.
Yeah, Doomsday Preppers is on the map for sure.
I gotta be sheriff here. I gotta be the Sasquatch kicking in the door.
Good. One dude's plan is just being a survivalist, and his partner, she fucking hates camping, has no
skills. I swear
skills,
to God,
and,
Ruben.
And he was like, you have to eat this bug or we're going to die. And she wouldn't do it. And all the reviews were just flaming him of like, she has to learn to do shit. This isn't going to work. You can't make everything for both of you, fucking dickhead.
So I had no idea that Doomsday Preppers had like the rating component to it. That makes it way more like appealing.
Yeah, I want to watch
the best
now.
Show you've ever seen of a dude being like, look at my Jeep. I can drive this Jeep through a fake wall after we escape through this skateboard tunnel. And then the panel comes out and they're like, none of your doors are reinforced and shit. Fucking like your kids can't drive the Jeep to escape. What's the point of the escape vehicle?
Is just a thing from Code Lyoko too.
They had to change that. I think I really hope that they said this. I think they said like it's also like a manual Jeep and both of you can't drive stick. They were just tearing this guy apart. They destroy these people. Please watch it.
Before
you go camping, watch Doomsday Prepper.
Honestly, to Doomsday Preppers and prepping is bullshit because you know in the future anyone that legitimately survives, given MAD doesn't fully play out, but any sort of societal collapse situation, you want to survive and you want to be the person thriving in the wilderness. You're not the person prepared that stays there with maybe what 3-4 months of shit tops. You're the person raiding and killing everyone inside.
Well,
yeah, you're the loot box. when you stay home, you're the loot box. Everyone knows.
Yeah,
when you're on the show. The show was like, we're gonna try and keep your location secret, but you know, we kind of blew it. Everyone's gonna know where you all are in days.
It's a nice
violence is not a very good survival strategy either. I mean, what you really want to do is have all the skills that you want a water filter, iodine tablets, you want to know how to not get a blister, and you want to be able to avoid being spotted. Like these
you
are
a high tier.
This is shit that my dad taught me when I was a kid, but it wasn't like a prepper thing. It was like, well, here's what the Army told me about not getting killed by the Viet Cong. And this information is widely applicable. I have used it in my normal everyday life a lot. Like,
all my socks are wool socks. That's what I was thinking. It's not prepper shit if it's practical. Right. If it actually is practical, that's the bar for me.
You know what they say on Drag Race? If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready.
Ooh,
I say that.
That's true.
That's Max.
If you take anything, hold on, wait 1 second. Hold on,
Jesus Christ, Ruben.
Before we close the door, let me tell you.
No, today is fuck me day.
Try out some wool socks. I've replaced all my sock springs with wool socks. If you're tired of cold titsies, no more. Wool socks, own bones. That shit's great.
Sounds like some
sale.
Gear, Ruben. Sounds like
Costco's
gear.
Got a good sale. Bass Pro Shot has like 40% wool socks on. Maria
oh
wool.
My god! I'm pulling out the Apollo.
Do you work for Costco? What the fuck is going on here?
That was a Bass Pro Shop. Costco's like 30% merino wool.
Oh
keep
my god!
The wool amount every year. Make sure you check the wool amount. Make sure the amount's not dropping. You don't want to get too low an amount. You want at least 30%.
Ruben,
but if you're going for hardcore shit, you're
at
probably
the house of the fucking Bass Pro Shops
get them, Ruben.
Pyramid.
The cargo chants are great if you're a big person.
Folks, he's in the pocket of Big Wolf right now.
I'm
that's a comfy pocket to be in.
Yeah, it's right. It's probably pretty warm.
I'm befuddled. I'm beside myself. I've laughed. I've cried. I've seen everything. At the top of the hill, the sound. Now I know what a sound is. I've lived in Washington several times, and I don't know what a sound is. I am permanently concussed, folks. I'm permanently concussed because I got out there. I fell on my head several times because I was a child, and I'm barely in many ways an adult. But I think back wistfully on times of the past where I'd get outside, mainly with brothers and whatnot. And I don't think it's a bad impulse to chase, to kind of rediscover the place you've had available to you all of this time. Just beyond simple platitudes, it's also just very soothing. And I'm a whiner. I bitch and complain the entire time. Even when I'm doing something good and cool, it's just like, why we got to dance? I like to sit down. Why do I got to dance at the club? I like the lounge. I'll just go to the lounge. Why did I go to the club? These are the ways in which I bitch. But the great thing about that is once all the bitching is done, and you get that all out of your system, you're left with your thoughts, or at least a semblance of quietness, of stillness, and disciplining yourself to enjoying stillness, not getting quick dopamine releases, I feel is essential to being the modern person, and maybe sometimes goes against the grain of what is considered a modern person. Couldn't imagine being a kid right now and doing as much tooth surgery on Elsa on my smartphone as my nieces and nephews do. I hate it. Maybe ISIS was right on that front. We'll never know. On that note, my name is Michelle Perez. This is the Pig Iron Podcast, no longer the Working On It Podcast. We doff our cap to you, old name, but Pig Iron is the new hotness. We are always sort of malleable and changing and can be molded into new things. And by gosh, that's the essence of DIY to me. So that's kind of my rationale for choosing the name. On that note, again, I'm Michelle Perez. As always, I'm joined by my buddy Ruben, my buddy Jake, my buddy Eliza, and incoming buddy Lucy for guesting today. I appreciate it. And coming on short notice, apropos of nothing. You're a real good sport. Everyone, take it easy and have a great night.